Welcome back, everybody, to the Fantasy Hockey Hacks podcast, a proud member of the Hockey Podcast Network and the official podcast of Left Wing Lock. I'm Devin Davidson, your host. With me, as always, Bruce Gunther, John Enns, and Tyler Homan. And joining us tonight, Hattie Kalakesh.
Exactly.
Caught that one finally. Yeah, I was so nervous about that one. Okay.
Awesome. Let's go.
Spit it out. from Dauber Hockey, so I should mention that as well. Hattie, thank you very much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so this should be a fun episode, episode 69. I know the boys have been waiting for that one.
Nice.
We're going to go over to our NHL draft preview. We're going to talk headlines. We'll do John's list like we always do. And then, of course, if you stick around to the end, we're going to announce the winner of our five Dauber Hockey prize packs. So don't take off early. And without any further ado whatsoever, because we want to keep rolling here and not have Hattie up too late, John, we're going to move to John's list.
All right, so for this episode of the list, we're going to go with Claude Giroux. I don't know. It's the hair, it's the beard, it's the everything. It's I just don't like the guy.
Just don't. Yeah, it's a classic John response. I just don't like the guy.
No, I don't. So all this talk about him going to Edmonton just kind of got me like, eh, no.
Hashtag advanced analytics, eh?
Yeah. Hashtag advanced analytics.
Absolutely.
I had mixed feelings on it too. I think he's 34 now, and he's probably going to want a 3-year deal at $5 million plus dollars annually. So I don't know. Tyler, what's your take on this? Because you always have an opinion on contracts.
I kind of like it. Would you rather have him at 3 years, or would you rather have Kane at like 7?
Ooh.
I want to say Kane. Like that's my knee-jerk reaction is Kane, but the history concerns you too, right? But look at how productive he was. I know the history. I know whatever. He'll sign a long-term deal and everyone says he'll coast and he'll cause trouble off the ice, but I don't know. I want to be optimistic about it. I want to feel like he'll actually produce, but
I think he looked good, but that's a pretty small sample size for a 7-year contract. Based on his history.
Yep.
I'd be fine with a 3-year contract for Drew, 2-year contract at a more reasonable cap hit. And you can probably plug in another guy on the third or fourth line with that extra cap space. So,
well, you know what, to quote one of my lifelong friends, sometimes you got to risk it to get the biscuit, Tyler. So
I do say that.
All right. Anything else there, John, you want to comment?
No. I don't know. Dude's trash. Don't like him.
Hattie, what's your take on Giroux? Because he's from the Ottawa area. You've probably seen him play once or twice.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with Giroux is you've got a guy who's going to dominate the power play regardless of which one he plays on. He's going to be a top power play unit guy. As he grows with age, I feel like, naturally his skating is going to deteriorate slightly. And, you know, you don't really need that where he plays and how he plays on the half wall. He's mostly the guy. He's not really, zooming around the offensive zone when he's manning the power play. It's mainly the guy that's going to staple himself at the left half wall, make plays, one-touch plays. He's going to find those cross seams. So regardless of what happens, he's going to be able to produce. Contract-wise, I'm not a big cap guy, so I can't really go too into depth, but really, like, I like his style. I like the hands, and the things that'll carry will carry. I think his hands won't go anywhere. He might sort of play wise at 5-on-5. He might sort of drop in points or whatever. But I think as long as they stick him on the first power play unit, wherever he goes, he'll be good.
One thing I like about Drew too is his face off ability. That's something Absolutely. The others could improve on, and I think mm-hmm. that doesn't hurt. Like you said, kind of his playing style, I think he may age okay. Like, you look at a guy like Pavelski, and he's done just fine.
Yeah.
Well, you don't like him, John, but that guy's phenomenal. So
he is not phenomenal.
So, Hattie, this is why we have John's list, because
he's already been
week,
on it.
Once, yeah, Pavelski's made an appearance there. But just so you know, that's the backstory on John's list, which I forgot
100%,
to mention.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you for your assessment of Claude Giroux. Let's move on to headlines with the hacks. Bruce, I'm going to hand this over to you. Oh, and actually, before we do, Hattie, my apologies. I should have given you a chance. Do you want to let our listeners know where they can find you and kind of a bit of your role with Dauber Hockey?
Well, Dauber Hockey Wise, I'm mainly an associate editor. So anything that comes in terms of prospect updates, all that, I'm the one that puts them in the system, vets through them, make sure they're valid, that kind of thing. And on Dauber Prospect side, which is specifically, you know, their prospect oriented section of the website, I am their main QMJHL scout. So I scout the QMJHL for them. And I scout the New Jersey Devils prospects in terms of drafted prospects. So those are my main roles with Dauber Prospects. And I also am the North American prospects writer for Habs Eyes on the Prize. So I do that as well.
Very cool. Yeah. So how did you get started with... Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter. My handle's right there beside my name. So that's where you can find me.
Perfect. And how did you get started with Dauber? How'd that come about?
I basically harassed Jokin of a line until he gave me a spot. That's usually how it goes. I was basically tweeting him, DMing him on Twitter maybe once every couple weeks, like, hey, is there an opening? Is there an opening? And then there was one, and that's how I got my foot in the door. And I just pushed and pushed and put out good content until he gave me some more responsibilities, and here I am. Hopefully it keeps going.
Very cool. So are you doing that? Is that your full-time gig now?
Oh, well, I do have a day job, but, that's just to pay the bills. What I want to do is either, work as a hockey writer full-time or become a scout. Hopefully for, start off with an OHL team, something like that, or a QMJHL team and work my way up.
Very cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. I'll quit with the 21 questions here. Bruce, take it away.
All right. We can hack our way through the news. All right. So this goes back a bit. So we got the injury list from the Tampa Bay Lightning. And as I mentioned here, it's long. Braden Point had a significant tear in his quad. So recovery time will be a while, but he's supposed to be ready for the beginning of the season, or for training camp, sorry. Anthony Cirelli, AC joint sprain in the New York series, and then dislocated his other shoulder in the series against the Avalanche. It sounded like he's going to need surgery. I haven't heard specifically, but they had said it sounded like he needed surgery. Corey Perry, AC shoulder joint sprain. I think that's basically a separated shoulder, is it not?
He should just quit.
Well, reason why I ask is because there's two more of them in this list. So.
Okay.
Brandon Hagel had a fractured foot. That was in the Florida series. Nick Paul, AC shoulder sprain and an MCL tear. He doubled down.
Goodness.
Ryan McDonough had a mangled finger. That's a direct quote, mangled finger. That happened in the Rangers series. Nikita Kucherov, MCL sprain. And then Belmar had an MCL sprain even before the playoffs started. So that's a significant list there. That's basically two and a half lines worth of people that were injured.
And then the Avs. Might as well talk about the Avs too, because
so the Avs list wasn't quite as long, but obviously Darcy Kuemper's was his eye back and forth. They had said he was seeing the optometrist 2 to 3 times a day to properly get his eye retrained.
Wow.
Yeah, did you see the photo of it?
No, I didn't see
that. Yeah, there's a photo on Twitter that he had posted. It looked pretty gnarly, actually.
Oh, wow. Samuel Girard, broken sternum. Those are the obvious ones. Nishushkin, broken foot. I think everyone saw those pictures on Instagram. That was pretty crazy. Nasty.
Yep.
Burakovsky, broken foot, broken thumb. Nazem Kadri was a broken thumb. And Darren Helm was an abdominal tear.
Yeah, I kept hearing that there's no way those guys should have played. I don't know if you guys listened to the Spit and Chicklets podcast, but Eric Johnson was on there, was talking about Kadri's injury. His thumb was broken in two places. He said there's no way he should have been playing. Nishushkin, we all saw the photos. Like,
yeah,
that was crazy.
Yeah, half these guys wouldn't play if it wasn't for Toradol. Like, yeah. It's next level, and it's very liberally used. Someone should check in on that, because that's a heavy painkiller. It shouldn't be, free range. It shouldn't have lineups of people just waiting to get their injections. It's not how this works,
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding.
Yikes.
Walking zombies.
Mm-hmm. And then since we're on the injury thing, Anthony Duclair suffered an Achilles tendon injury. They weren't specific what happened to it, but he injured it in off-season training. He's had surgery to repair his injury, and he's expected to return about mid-season.
I kept hearing it's a lengthy recovery, and a lot of guys aren't quite the same after.
Yep. Yeah. And watch Carlson. Never the same since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's not good news for Duclair or the Panthers. And, you know, you'd like to think, okay, well, at least they have some money they can put on LTIR, but I think his cap, it was only like $3 or $3.5 million. Mm-hmm. So you'd in that situation, you'd definitely rather have the player.
100%.
Yeah, most definitely. All right, and we have a trade to announce. Kevin Fiala was traded to the Los Angeles Kings for the 19th overall pick in the 2022 draft, and Brock Faber, defenseman. Fiala, who was an RFA, then signed shortly thereafter a 7-year contract extension worth $7.875 million per season.
It was a good day for Fiala.
Oh, 100%.
Definitely. Most definitely.
I put that reel out there, and I talked about the Fiala trade, but what was your guys' take on it? Like, Tyler, you chimed in too. I agree with you, for the record, 100%. Like, LA wins that deal. Mm-hmm. But I just think because Guerin and the rest of the league knew they weren't going to be able to hold on to Fiala, the fact that he was able to get a first rounder, and even if it is a B-level prospect, and Hattie, you can maybe talk more to that, but I mean, I thought it was an okay return for someone you're probably going to lose regardless.
I just don't think that. I think they could have got more, especially in the kind of cap crunch they're in. You kind of want warm bodies that can play right now, and kind of replace his 85 points or whatever he had last season. And maybe there wasn't anything out there, but I think Guerin probably jumped the gun a little bit. I think he probably could have waited a little bit longer and probably got maybe a little bit more, somebody that could actually help out right now. That was cost controlled, because they need that after those buyouts that probably weren't the smartest move.
I'd agree with that. There's a chance, though, he could maybe flip those two first. And Hattie, we'll talk about that in the draft preview. But what's your take on Brock Faber? Like, is he anyone that's going to help them in the next 2 or 3 seasons?
Well, here's the thing. I think the Kings do an excellent job of reading prospects and evaluating which ones need more development, which ones have topped out in terms of what they can do. Faber's a great skater, and he's just very calculated in the way he approaches defending. Rather as you watch Caden Gooley, and he's just full on aggression. It's a different style of defender. He's topped out offensively so far in the last 2 seasons with Minnesota. He's gotten approximately the same level of production. I think 14 points. Yeah, 14 points in 32 games this year with the Gophers, which isn't bad. But I'd say, you know, there are prospects that are more, you know, along offensively, especially when they have this level of skating. So I trust the Kings and what they did here. And I think they probably, you know, end up being the winners of this trade. But Faber as a B prospect, a prospect who can one day play in the NHL, I'm just not sure how high. But, you know, this is a decent trade for the Kings, who come out of this with the best player and sign him to a 7-year extension and probably put themselves in contention, especially if they pair him with a guy like Dano, who can turn pucks over in defensive zone, skate him up the ice, find an outlet, and get it to Fiala. I think that's a pairing. It's a match made in heaven, Fiala and Dano.
Okay. Yeah, I think their top 6 looks great now. As an Oilers fan, I don't like the trade, but that's okay. Actually, Bruce and I are talking about that. The Oilers would have been in really tough to win that series if Doughty were healthy, if they had Fiala. I don't know. I don't know how that series would have gone, honestly. But, Bruce, speaking of the Oilers, should we get into it?
Yes, Mr. Jesse Puljujärvi. It sounds like he's on his way out. Much to the chagrin of a lot of Oilers fans. Apparently, there's at least 4 teams interested in him that were reported. Arizona, Carolina, New Jersey, and Ottawa. And the Sharks are possibilities, so I guess that's 5. Second or third round pick is an expected return. I didn't know this. Puljujärvi is deemed a play killer inside the Oilers dressing room. Ouch. Believe that there are 2 of the best centermen in the world has not been enough to turn Puljujärvi into a legitimate top 6 winger in the NHL. Puck dies on his stick in the offensive zone too often and continues to saddle Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl with, oh my Yeah, oh, that's Mark Spector, so yeah, it's to be expected.
That's so weird to me. It's so strange to me because Puljujarvi is analytically he's one of the best play drivers in the league. You know, defensively especially, he prevents scoring chances at a level that's pretty much unmatched. You know, no one was at his level with the Oilers, from what I understand. You know, I haven't watched him in the Oilers game, if I'm honest. I've watched him in the playoffs, which was, you know, a small sample size. But from what I saw, you know, he's pretty capable defensively, and he prevents the puck from ever getting in his own zone, usually, when he's in the offensive zone. So, I don't know.
Tyler, I'll let you assess Jesse Puljujärvi for us.
Thank you. I'm going to first assess Mark Spector, though. He's an idiot, a complete joke. And John, if he's not on your list next week, I'm going to riot. Like, hockey writers back when the Oilers were in their heyday, when these guys that are from here got into it, should have been out of it in the early 90s when Edmonton was too. He's a joke. He does this with players. It doesn't even make sense. PRV is 24 years old. His analytics are great. His puck skills could probably definitely use some work. Plays do die on his stick quite a bit. He does seem to force plays that aren't there. Yamamoto does the same thing. Nobody talks about that. It's a joke. Somebody that's 6'4", his size, has the ranginess that he does and the tenacity that he does on pucks. It makes absolutely no sense. You're not going to find anybody to replace him who's a restricted free agent at $1 million, whatever he is, $1.1 million, anything in that range. Reports came out after that he actually hasn't asked for a trade. I think Edmonton was kind of trying to soften the blow to fans to make it seem like he wanted out because they're going to trade him because they got to pick somebody. But they're going to lose the trade and they're going to hate it later. And whoever gets him is going to be happy that they did. And Mark Spector's an idiot. And I'm just going to mute myself.
Thanks for reiterating that.
Yeah, no, it's some of the reporting in that article, like I included it in here before some of the later reports came out, Tyler, because yeah, it was later reported that there wasn't a trade request submitted, but there is some sentiment out there that Puljujärvi isn't sure that he wants to stay too, right? I've heard from credible sources, Pierre LeBrun, Elliot Friedman have said, it kind of seems like there's a mutual feeling between both sides that a fresh start might be best. Mm-hmm. And so my one response to Oilers fans out there, because there's a lot of, I mean, Hattie, if you're to search for Jesse Puljujärvi on Twitter, like just the amount of tweets out there is ridiculous. But
oh yeah,
the player has to want to stay here, and it doesn't appear to be the case right now. And so I think there's a lot of frustration amongst fans. But if the player doesn't want to be here, there's really not much you can do, right? Like,
I think part of that too is that's kind of what Edmonton is for players. Like, I'm sure he feels it, he hears it, he sees it. There's people on one side that are, don't ever trade him. He's going to be something, you're going to regret it. And there's the other guys that are ready to move on. And I think for somebody like him, who is kind of just by nature a shy guy, to have that talk every single season and every off season, it'd be easy for him to be in Carolina.
Yeah.
And not have that. So,
yeah.
I don't blame him, but Mark Spector's still an idiot.
Yeah, well, the last thing I'll say on this, Tyler, I do like Puljujärvi. I was all in favor of them signing him for another year or two just to see what came of it, because there's still lots of potential there. And Hattie, going back to the analytics, someone on the internet had compared him and Nichushkin, their analytics side by side, and they're almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's potential there. Someone is going to get that player, and they're going to be quite happy with him eventually.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, the thing with Nichushkin is, you know, we saw it especially these playoffs when you pair him with players who can receive his passes and get out of the zone. You know, you don't need to be perfect in your own zone if you're never in your own zone. That's defense. Yeah. You know, if you're constantly in the neutral and offensive zone, you're never defending, you're never receiving, you know, scoring chances against or shot attempts against, and it translates the same. The idea is to create more scoring chances in your opposition, and I think Puljujärvi does that great, and Nichushkin does that great. It's just, it translates well. I don't I don't understand why the Oilers are so, you know, intent on shipping off for what, a second, a third? Like, and then after that, we're like, well, where's the winger depth? And it's like, you traded it away like multiple times. There's another occasion, like the Griffin Reinhardt trade.
Oh no, don't go there.
Okay. You know, I'll spare you guys that. I'll let you guys have your moment. It's okay. Let's move on.
No.
Oh, come on, guys. Why don't we go there?
Let him have his say.
Go ahead. No, I'm actually interested to hear what you have to say on this one.
You never trade a first round pick in the top 16 for a defender who's unproven.
Yeah,
it's just not a thing you do. And I don't know where that idea came from, but the Islanders got Matt Barzal out of it, so they're happy. And what was with the Bruins? Like the three picks before that. I'm still scratching my head about, like, on draft day, I was like, what are they doing? Who is Zach Senyshyn? Like, it was crazy.
They could have had Kyle Connor, Thomas Chabot, and yeah, like, unbelievable. But,
yep.
Oh, well.
The only guy of those three that became, like, a full-time NHLer asked for a trade. It's great. It's awesome.
Well, we might as well talk about Jake DeBrusk then, too, speaking of which. Bruce, apparently he rescinded his trade request.
That's what I read this morning, yeah. That he's rescinded his trade request. He's willing to stay in Boston now.
I don't think he liked Cassidy.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's a lot of reports about Cassidy not being the best coach.
He's a perfect fit in Vegas. Yeah,
exactly. Jack Eichel, come on down, right?
Yeah. Yeah, let them burn.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. Bob Bugner has been relieved of his duties as the head coach of the San Jose Sharks. Took him a little while to do that. Didn't really see that coming, but
San Jose is kind of interesting because they're kind of a mess right now. And forever they were like the model franchise. Playoffs every year, players all wanted to be there. Seemed so well run, and now they're kind of a joke. So
yeah, I think it's just a Carlson trade just tanked them. Imagine them with Josh Norris. I think they'd do great, you know?
Yeah, but it's just, when that trade happened too, like, I was like, who the hell is Josh Norris? Obviously, I don't work for
Should have had the prospect guy, Tyler.
I wasn't the prospect guy, so I didn't really know. But, I mean, he's turned out probably better than I think anybody really even projected him to.
Yep.
So
it's crazy because the Sens will do that, like trade for a guy who no one knows about who will turn out great, and then they'll draft Tyler Boucher 10th overall. So it's like, you know,
I think they take some, you lose some,
right?
Like. Yeah, I think they got a little lucky with that one. But
was that before or after Pierre McGuire was doing the draft picks?
Oh my god,
That was short lived.
Yeah. Now he's probably going to be back on TV, which, you know,
yes,
great.
Hopefully not up here.
No, he is. Well, it's Sportsnet. Yeah, Sportsnet. I heard Sportsnet. He's going to be gracing our presence on Canadian television.
Oh, God. Oh, good. Good.
Another reason to change the channel.
Him and Mark Spector. This will be good.
The memes will be crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Will they hurt?
Enough.
All right. Tampa Bay didn't wait very long. They signed Nick Paul to a 7-year, $22.5 million contract extension. So that's $3.15 million per season.
Tyler, you gotta be okay with that.
Yeah, I think it's okay. I think it's a really long contract for a third line player, but
yeah.
And considering Ottawa's gonna give him 4 years at 2.6 and he said no, I thought he would kind of sit around that like 4 or 5 years at 3. But not in a state like Florida with no tax. So he did pretty well. He did pretty well going to Tampa and getting a long-term deal out of it. So
yeah, he's happy.
Definitely. Speaking of contract extensions, Brock Besser signed a 3-year, $6.65 million contract extension with the Vancouver Canucks. There were some rumors that he was headed out of town, but they're going to keep him around for a while.
So this pretty much ensures that JT Miller's on his way out.
More or less. Yeah. Unless they pull a Julian Breezeboro and somehow trade away some cap hit that they have dead on the, you know, on the roster and stuff like that. But I'd be surprised. I don't think JT Miller even really wants it that much. So
no.
He's going to ask for a lot. Like he was a 90 plus point player in last season. So
yeah.
All right. Jim Montgomery was hired as the 29th head coach of the Boston Bruins. Crickets. Okay, crickets.
Nothing there. Nothing there.
Nothing there. Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Moving on to the next. Rick Bowness has been hired as the next coach of the Winnipeg Jets.
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
I got nothing there either. Sorry, Bruce.
I think the only thing there is that it was only a 2-year contract, which is interesting. Pretty short contract for a new coach to come in. Most coaches come in on 3-year contracts or more.
It's kind of a prove it though, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Might have been a mutual feeling though too, Tyler, because after Barry Trotz passed up on Winnipeg, like, and then to your point last week, maybe Bonus didn't want to sign a long term deal either.
Yeah, maybe they give him the year and then let him go and bring in who they wanted anyway. So
yeah.
Especially if they trade guys off.
Yeah, the Barry Trotz will come in next year.
Yeah,
Bonus.
Just like this place is mine now.
Yeah, exactly. You're just a placeholder.
Yeah.
And the Tampa Bay Lightning made a trade. They traded defenseman Ryan McDonagh to the Nashville Predators for Philippe Myers and Grant Mishmash. One neat thing about Myers' contract is that it allows him to be bought out at beginning of the season. There would be a cap hit for the first season, but then there would be a cap charge for the second season.
Well, that cap credit that you're referring to, apparently Tampa has no intention to use it.
They're going to keep him as a...
Well, that was the reports. Defender. That was the reports, right? So, they shed some salary, right? It was $6.75 million for the next 4 seasons, but they've got a guy there in Mikhail Sergachev that can fill in for Ryan McDonagh, right? Like he's going to take over all those minutes. He's been averaging something like 40 points over the past 3 seasons. So I like Sergachev. Like for fantasy, from a fantasy perspective, this trade helps Sergachev. I think it's going to help Palat because now he's got a much better chance to stay in Tampa.
Yeah.
And I think it actually, to some degree, is going to help Saros because they bolster their defense in Nashville a little bit.
Yeah.
So
do we know that Grant Mishmash is a real person? Is that a real
thing? Let me look him up for you real quick.
Yeah. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. That sounds like something Tampa Bay just made it
invented.
Up.
Yep.
And circumventing the cap again.
I heard something today from Nick Kypreos on McDonagh about how Tampa went to him and said, hey, we've got a couple teams that are interested, and he didn't really want to move. He has a no trade, but he doesn't have a no move. So he was told that Columbus, if he goes on waivers, Columbus was going to put a claim in for him. And his option was to go to Nashville or go on waivers. And he obviously picked Nashville. So
that's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
It's interesting considering all the reports out of Tampa about how liked he was in the room and everything like that. And to kind of give him those two options. I guess that's what happens when you win a couple Stanley Cups, but not a lot of loyalty there. So,
they had to make room. That's really all it is. And, you know, Julien Brisebois was a genius, really. Like how usually with contracts like these, with defenders of that age, you have to give up something in order to get something in return. I'm astounded. Like just getting two guys, like let's be honest, they're just guys, right? Like,
Grant Mishmash. Yeah. He might not even be a guy.
12 points in 57 AHL games. Watch him go to Syracuse, and they'll just develop the hell out of him and just make him something. And he'll score 10 goals in the playoffs, and we'll be all like, okay, sure, that's a thing.
Brisebois does it again.
Yeah.
All
right, Bruce, is that pretty much do it for headlines then?
That's the news, yeah.
All right. We've got an ad read here. Let's tell our listeners about DraftKings. As a member of the Hockey Podcast Network, the Fantasy Hockey Hacks podcast, a proud partner of DraftKings. The action never ends at DraftKings Sportsbook, officially this summer. With tons of ways to bet on all your favorite sports, you can fuel your fandom and feel the heat of the season like never before. Plus, right now, DraftKings Sportsbook is giving new customers a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's right, Tyler. Make your first bet up to $1,000, and if it doesn't win, you'll get another shot to cash in. You can throw down on all major action for baseball, golf, MMA, and more. Plus, with the same game parlays, spreads, money lines, over-unders, and props, your betting options feel endless. Please talk about best of all, DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. You can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Make your first deposit and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's promo code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See our show notes for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem or crisis counseling is required, all the information will be included in the show notes. And I probably deserve that, boys, because I've been harassing you about Ron Burgundy and the teleprompter, and I just did it to myself. All right. Take that. Great. That's what karma feels like. All right. Without any further ado, Hattie, I'm pretty much just going to, the floor is yours, my friend. NHL draft and Dauber Hockey Prospect Report. Take it away.
Yeah. So essentially, we basically just sort of write about all of the different drafted prospects for each team, right? So each team has its own writer, and they send in updates throughout the year based on what the player's doing, what they're going through, injuries, point totals, if they're going through a hot streak, a cold streak, all that goes on the site in their individual player profiles. And then at the end of the season, we all come together, and then the main writers each pick a couple teams, and we essentially just go through all of their main prospects and write about them and how they're doing, how they project, what their comparables are. There's a bunch of different sections on, mock drafts, top 100 prospects, draft eligibles as well. We do a big section, which I wrote this year entirely. I basically just wrote about the top 100 prospects that are likely to go in the top 100, the ones that are most likely to have, top 6 or top 4 pairing ceilings. A bunch of stuff like that. We go into fantasy projections, outlooks into next year. It's the most in-depth work in terms of prospect reports when we're talking about general stuff, because elite prospects every year for draft eligibles, I'd say they're on top. But in general, when it comes to drafted prospects and just the general work that we put in, it's really exhaustive, and you don't get that much from other websites. So it's a really good source for anyone, especially on the fantasy side, who wants to know how players project. We look at points only versus multi-cat. We focus on that as well. So it's really in-depth, especially on the fantasy side.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in here. I loved your section, by the way. Like, I thought you did a great job just breaking down all the players. Someone like me, who I don't go that in-depth generally on prospects, it was really helpful just to kind of know how some of the players project. Maybe you could explain a little bit on the three-year probability or three-year probable stats, how those, what that means in the prospect report.
So it's changed. I know once it was really like the next 3 years, how many points are going to get in total, but we changed it up and decided that it would be better to have a projection of how they would look like in 3 years if they played in the NHL. So a player who is close to NHL ready will have a higher 3AYP than a player who is, let's say, 5 years down the line from playing in the NHL. That's essentially what it's like.
Okay. And then, of course, you guys included an NHL comparable, not necessarily their playing style, but sort of from a points production standpoint. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's also sort of a playing style thing because, you want to look at how players are going to be down the line and the style of guy that you're getting as a fantasy owner. So, if you're in a points-only league, a player like Val Nichushkin might not be as valuable as a player like, Mitch Marner, or on the lower end side, someone like Ryan Strome is going to get a bunch of, power play time, that kind of stuff. So it's a good way to sort of show fantasy owners what kind of player they're getting.
Okay, there you go. I'll include a link to the prospect report in the show notes here for anyone that's interested in purchasing it, but what's the cost right now for the prospect report? There's bundles you can do as well.
Yeah, I'll go check that out for you, actually, because I have it off the top of my head. But it's not really that expensive. It's something that's pretty affordable, especially for the work we put in. We work on this, for a good 3-4 months before it comes out. So let me just check that out for you here. Yeah, it's on the Dauber Sports website. You can check it out at daubersports.com. Little plug there. But yeah, it's just a great source. I'm just coming up with it right now. Just hold on here. It's $14.99 for the Fantasy Prospects Report. If you're really interested in how prospects are doing and you have keeper leagues, $14.99 for the work we put in. That's a great price.
Yeah, no question. Mm-hmm. And then there, you can bundle that too with the Fantasy Hockey Guide as well, exactly. Which is one of the five prize packs we'll be giving away this mm-hmm. evening. All right, so let's move on to the draft here. So, I mean, maybe tell our listeners a bit about the draft class in general. Like we talked earlier, it sounds like it's actually kind of a deep draft, but there's maybe not as much high-end or elite-level talent as we've seen in the past couple of years.
And we've been blessed with amazing, you know, top-end picks in the last few years. Every single year, I think, in the last five or six, there's been one or two guys at the top of the draft that are either generational or elite players in their projections. It's not very similar in this year. I think it's very similar to 2017, where, you know, you had Heischer and Patrick at the top, and then after that, that's when things got interesting. You know, Heischer's a good player, but I mean, you know, Cale Makar, Miro Heiskanen, Elias Pettersson, Jake Ottinger, Jason Robertson in the second round. I think the after the top five is actually where it gets interesting, because let's say from like 10 to 40, there isn't much of a difference in terms of the value of players. There might be differences in upside, but I think contenders like Tampa, like Carolina, those kinds of teams are going to go for the surefire bets. And then in the second round, the early second round, you're going to see a couple guys that could come out and be, you know, tremendous players in the top six or on a first or second pair defensively. So it's really the depth that's interesting this year. I think through maybe pick 75, I was still putting in players that was like, yeah, I like this guy, you know? Okay. So it's very deep.
Okay. Is there a potential superstar in this draft class? Like who in your mind is at that level or close?
I'm going to name you two NTDP guys. First, and in this order, Frank Nazar.
Okay. I knew we were going to talk about that guy. Yep.
Yeah. We're going to go more in depth eventually, but I think he's going to be the, you know, if he hits, he's the top points only value player in this draft. So the type of guy who's going to produce offensively at a high level. And then you've got Logan Cooley, who to me shows an elite level of playmaking and creativity. And, you know, there's so many layers to his defensive game as well. And there's two defensive players I'm going to throw in here as well, in Simon Nemec and David Juracek. I'm still on the fence on who's better because they're really that tight. But I think it really just depends on what your team wants. If you want a player who's going to rack it up offensively and push the pace and show creativity and open up lanes, I'd go for David Juracek. And if you want a tremendous skater with good defensive value, you go for Simon Nemec.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then in terms of goaltenders, are there any quality goaltenders in this draft? Like, I think based on some of your rankings I looked at, it looks like maybe not until the second or third round.
I wouldn't go for a goalie in the first two rounds, but the two guys that I'm looking at the most would be Topias Laineinen, who plays in Finland, and Tyler Brennan, who plays in the WHL. Those are the two guys that are most likely to go one and two in the draft. And I don't think there's any elite value there, but you could get a starter out of them. And if you can get that in the third round, then great.
So in terms of NHL comparables, like what would you compare their playing style to for either goaltender?
It's hard to say. I'd say Tyler Brennan reminds me a bit of a Jack Campbell type, where he's a bit sprawly. But he's got some control as well. He's got some composure. He's just very sort of reactive, and he can make those desperation saves. And Laineinen is a guy who it's hard to compare because goalies are so unique. But you know, someone like Peter Mrazek, someone in that style. I need to watch them more. I'm mostly on the skater side, and there's a lot of weirdness with goalies. They're very hard to project, which usually is what leads to goalies, you know, that are quite good being drafted in later rounds. But that's more or less what I project them as.
So we're probably looking at some borderline starters, journeyman type goaltenders.
Something of that range. It could be a bit better, but you know, that's how I project them at this point. And I could look ridiculous for this take in 5 years. There might be a goalie in the sixth round that comes out of nowhere and just becomes an elite goalie. You never know with goalies. It's crazy.
I've heard that a few times, not specific to goaltenders, but just the fact that there could be a guy that comes out of the seventh round that just maybe he's the best player in five years. Like it could happen in this draft.
100%.
All right. Does New Jersey trade the number two pick, or do you think they hold on to it?
It depends on the return, but I'd say they keep it just because of how tight it is at the top end of this draft. Whatever happens, they'll come out with one of either Slafkovský or Wright or Cooley, which are three excellent selections and make me feel like, you know, there's not much value in them trading it away just to trade it away. It needs to be a solid return for them to have it, especially if Slafkovský is available. I think the Devils jump on that pick just to put him next to Hughes and Heischer and just see what happens there. We'll talk about it later on. There's things about Slafkovský's game that sort of have me sort of, would I take him in the top three? But I think the Devils won't look past the 6'4 frame and his playmaking and goal scoring ability.
Okay, well, maybe let's jump into some player projections and discussion here then. Like, I'm kind of curious to hear your breakdown and maybe your ranking of the top five and how you kind of see that shaking out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in my personal rankings, I put out some final rankings on Twitter. You can find them there. I still have Shane Wright first. That hasn't changed. I don't think it should change. Shane Wright has been the number one pick since he was 15, and for good reason. You know, if you draw a perfect line between Patrice Bergeron and John Tavares, that middle is where I would put him. He's not quite as defensively, you know, elite. You know, Bergeron's a generational defensive forward. You know, he's not that, but he's got that side, and he doesn't have the goal scoring and elite stick handling ability that a John Tavares has. But he's in that middle, and you could swing him either way if you develop him well. But I think he's got a mix of those two, and I think he projects as at minimum for me, he's a 2C. So it's a very safe projection, someone you can slot in very easily in an NHL roster. And on top of that, he's got the elite potential that comes with a guy that's had that that projection his whole career. You know, you look at his numbers when he was 15, 16 in the OHL, he was dominating. Of 39 goals and 60-ish games. That's not nothing for a 15, 16-year-old. And this year, he was basically in a babysitting role throughout the first half of the season. He was basically put with two rookies, and he was just like, okay. They were just like, okay, just, you know, go and play with these two rookies and get them good chances. And it's like, they weren't in the right spots. They weren't really finding soft ice the way that Wright likes his teammates to. You know, he's a guy who feeds off his teammates. You need to put him with good players to see him really reach that full ceiling. And the moment they put him with Martin Kromyak, his game took off, and he ended up as the top scorer in the OHL for draft eligibles. So I'm not worried about the whole, you know, he had a bad season thing. I think he had a decent season this year. So
he had 90 some points, I think, and
91 points in 60-ish games. Like, that's not bad for a draft eligible regardless. Like, sure, you can worry about that, but in the role he was put in, I'm not concerned.
So I think there's probably a fit there then with Montreal, right? I mean, they could use another center like that. Do you think this is a case of a player like Slafkovský? Like, lots of guys that get so focused on, say, the World Juniors, right, and what their tournament looks like there, or I mean, for him it was the Olympics, right, and the Senior Men's World Championship. So
exactly. Well, the thing is with Slafkovský is, you know, he's got a lot of great elements to his game to go with his size. He's not just your typical power forward. He can make plays at a high level as well. The main concern with me when it comes to Slafkovský is just the fact that he flourishes when he has the puck for a long time, and you don't get that much in the NHL. That's why he reminds me of Kaapo Kakko. He's got that, Kakko's got that exact same concern where he needs a lot of time on the puck in order to be at his best. So when it comes to Slafkovský, it just really depends on the work that's put into his projections and the way he develops. And I think that, you know, if he goes to the Devils, do have a good rap sheet when it comes to forwards. They tend to stick him in the AHL for a while, and Slafkovský's eligible to go in the AHL, which is, you can't say for Cooley or Wright. So I think there's a fit there. He might play in the NHL this year, but I think the safest bet for the Devils is just to let him play in Utica for a couple of years. Let him work on his game in terms of playing quickly, because that's one thing the AHL teaches you, is you need to get the puck to your teammates quick. Find those small opportunities, those 0.5 1 second moments where you get the puck and make plays. That's what's missing from Slafkovský's game at the moment. And if he develops that, then his projection gets a lot better. But for me, for the moment, he's probably a second line left winger who can, you know, pitch in terms of playmaking in his own zone, in the offensive zone. He's a bit of everything.
Okay. Logan Cooley, the NHL comparable here, according to the prospect report, is Trevor Zegras. And mm-hmm. Craig Button, I was listening to him today. He compared him to Sebastian Aho and calling him the slickest player in the draft.
Yeah, slick is right. The reason why I don't have Cooley higher than Slavkovsky and actually have him sixth overall in my rankings is a couple red flags. First, I feel like he's too creative for his own good. He seems to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks, which, you know, it works right now, but does he keep that same mindset moving forward, or does he build around his defensive game and move up from there? That's my main question with him. The other issue is I don't like his right hand. I feel like his stick is a tiny bit too long for his hands. He holds it a bit high and he doesn't really catch pucks in his hip pocket. He sort of catches it in front of him. And if you do that at the NHL level, you're a lot less deceptive. Because from the hip pocket, you can pass, you can shoot, you can stick handle in one move. And it's the same position regardless. So that's a really projectable thing that I see, for example, in Frank Nazar that I don't see in Cooley. Other than that, though, playmaking wise, tremendous. So creative. He has tremendous vision. His delay game is really good. Defensively, he's, you know, among the best in this class in terms of suppressing scoring chances, stealing pucks, creating turnovers, all that good stuff. He has good compete. He skates pretty well. His upper body's a bit noisy when he skates. You can see him sort of jot up and down when he's skating, but that's something that's fixable. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if Arizona doesn't take him at third, they're making a mistake. They need to sell tickets, and he does that. So yeah, you might as well, you know?
Okay. And then let's get to some defensemen here. So we've got David Yurchek and Simon Nemec, which you had mentioned earlier. So mm-hmm. still undecided who's going to be better there, but the NHL comparables are Burns for Yurchek and Adam Fox for Nemec.
Yeah, and, you know, at their prime between those two, you know, Burns and Fox, who do you take? That's basically it. It depends on what you need. I think Yurchek's going to score a lot more goals. His shot is a lot more projectable, and he finds, not only finds Twine, but chooses his spots to shoot the puck really well. He doesn't just shoot to shoot and score. Sometimes he'll shoot to find rebounds and you know, triangulate with his opponent, with his teammates. But Nemec's defensive game to me is superior. I think it'll translate a lot better. And his skating is, I think Nemec is one of the best skaters in this draft. And I don't think defenseman wise, other than maybe Pavel Mentyukov, I don't see many comparables in terms of just the fluidity, the agility, the puck rushing ability. Like, Nemec is a puck rushing defenseman. Yurchek is more of that run and gun sort of defenseman who's going to create offensive chances, but he's not going to carry the puck left and right, you know?
Yep. Okay. Kevin Korchinski was a major riser in TSN's final rankings. So he moved up 14 spots to number 11 on McKenzie's list. What can you tell us about him? What's your assessment of Korchinski? And I saw him on Craig Button's list as well, I think around number 10.
Yeah. Korchinski has some limitations. I didn't notice this until Mitch Brown from Elite Prospects mentioned it, but basically he can only cut back on one side, but he's very good at what he does. He has a formula and it works great for him. I would like him to diversify and find other areas of his game. That's why I have him a bit lower on my rankings. Let me check. I think I have him 18th on my rankings. The reason for that is he's a pure playmaker as a defenseman. He can find lanes. He has the vision. It's tremendous, especially in the offensive zone. And, you know, coming out of his zone, he finds his formula is basically, I'll cut back, I'll find the middle, I'll cross the defensive blue line, and then I'll try a pass. And it works great. And that's a formula that can work at the NHL level, but you need to have other things because NHL forwards will watch videos of you, especially in the playoffs. They'll watch videos, they'll study your game, and they'll come up, they'll understand your formula and come up with the best way to counter it. But he just, I don't like his shot. I think it needs a lot of work. But the upside with Korchinski, if you get him to diversify and you get him to find other areas to his game, it's sky high. I think he could be a top pair defenseman if he's worked on properly. So that's why he's more in the project range of my draft.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Frank Nazar. I know you had mentioned even before the show, this is a guy you're really high on. Take it away.
Yeah. Nazar, to me, is the highest point-producing prospect in terms of upside in this draft. He's the best skater, in my opinion. No one skates like him. No one has the agility, the evasiveness, the edge work, the top speed that he has. And he has the softest hands I've ever seen. I can't count the amount of times that I see him surrounded by four guys with the puck on the tip of his stick, and I'm like, okay, this is a turnover. I look down, I jot down a turnover on my list, and I look up and he still has the puck. And I'm like, that's what made me really fall in love with this prospect, is I like prospects who are smart and can control the chaos. And Nazar doesn't just control the chaos. He is the controlled chaos. Like he makes things happen whether his opponents want to or not. And to me, that's very projectable. He pushes the pace, but also can slow it down. He cuts to the middle. He plays between checks. He has tenacity. He's pretty good defensively. He's underrated defensively, in my opinion. And he's been put at center this year, which is a huge responsibility for a guy who's played wing so long in his career. And he's done great because he has that vision and that two-way ability. So that's what's weird to me, is I see him on other rankings so low, and I'm like, what is going on? The amount of projections I've seen where guys are like, oh, this is a surefire middle six guy who's going to play on both special team units. And it's like, that's his B game. Like, that's to me, that's the worst that can happen to Nazar, is he becomes a two-way guy who can play in the middle six. But he has that top line upside. I see it.
I was going to ask you, because I've seen, like, he's ranked outside the top 10 by a lot of scouts, number 11 in the prospect report, I think. McKenzie has him at number 15. Craig Button had him at number 25. Like, just a lot of different rankings. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Mitch Marner was his NHL comparable. Is that fair?
I'm still debating that. I think he's closer to Braden Point than Mitch Marner in terms of style. But the point projections, I'd say, like, if he somehow gets, like, if you put Frank Nazar with Austin Matthews, you'd probably get the same results as you do with Mitch. Like, he is that smart and understands his teammates that well. And the concern at the start of the year was he seemed to cut to the middle at all costs, regardless of what was going on. He would try to get to the middle, try to get to the net, try to create and try to finish plays. He was mostly the guy who wanted to be at the end of the play. He was either creating dangerous scoring chances or shooting. But the more the year went on, the more I saw give and goes, the more I saw sort of triangular plays, the more I saw him use the boards, his defensemen, you know, cycle up, funnel down, like all this stuff that creates a diverse offensive game that's even less predictable. And the more the year went on, the less I got worried. I started off, I might have had him 18th or 19th, and I'd watched him two or three times to start with. And then when I watched him 10 times, 15 times, 20 times, I was like, okay, I like this kid. So the more the year went on, the more I got comfortable with my projection of him.
You've got him at number 2, is that correct?
I've got him second overall on my rankings, and I've gotten some flack for that. But, you know, I'm sticking through it. I like him.
I like it. All right. Brad Lambert was another player I wanted to talk about. He's fallen a bit in this draft. How do you see him developing long term? Is he a top 10 or a potential top 10 player?
He needs work. I've got him 11th overall, so right outside the top 10. But to me, he's the best finished prospect. He's better than Joachim Kamel, in my mind. The reason for that is the big concern with Lambert was his processing, his decision-making, both on and off the ice. Off the ice, there have been issues with coaches. He's asked for trades. He's changed teams multiple times, and you wonder, like, is this a player who is loyal enough that teams will be like, yeah, I want this guy. But he's just a guy who really wants to win. And when he's put on the wing in a dump and chase system, when he's a center who benefits from, you know, the best thing that Lambert's good at is receiving pucks in the neutral zone and carrying them up the ice. And when he's playing wing in a dump and chase system, he's just not doing that. Right. So to me, that was maybe half the issue of his decision-making, is the fact that he was put in a scenario where he couldn't make the decisions he wanted to. And he's got him and Nazar are neck and neck in terms of skating to me. He's got one of the best skating strides I've ever seen in any prospect. And then you add to that the fact that he's got silky mitts, he's got a good shot, he can make plays. if he works out perfectly, he could be a top line player, but he's got a lot of kinks to work out still. He's still raw as a prospect, and I think he needs some time. And I think Seattle acquired his rights, the Thunderbirds, and the WHL acquired his rights with some conditions based on if he plays or not. But I think the WHL would be the best place for him to develop his game because he needs to find that delay game. He likes to push the pace as much as possible, but I'd like to see him slow down the play, you know, take it back a couple notches, cycle back, reevaluate, find other options. That's the thing he needs to develop, and the WHL is a good place to work on that.
And the NHL comp here is Matt Duchene. Is that still accurate in your mind?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. The type of guy who won't give you much defensively, but will always push the pace, will always get pucks on net, and can make plays at a high level. Yeah.
All right. Jiří Kulič, he moved up 22 spots in TSN's final draft rankings. What's your take on that guy?
I love Kulich. I'm a big fan. He is maybe in the top two or top three best defensive forwards in the class, and no one talks about it. I think that's one of his most underrated aspects of his game. He's got a tremendous shot, and if you put him on the power play like he was able to at the U18 Worlds, that's, you know, you saw how good he was. I think he had 9 goals in 6 games, which for Czechia is very good. And he's got good skating. I want to see him feed off his teammates a bit more. He likes to be the last guy in, sort of like Nizar, where he likes to be the last guy in the play, either finishing or getting the primary assist. And I just want him to sort of add some secondary offense to this game, just to make him more projectable. But I think defensively, he's going to be a sure bet to play on the penalty kill and have a good sort of impact. I compared him to Nichushkin, which I think is a very good comparison for Kulić.
Perfect. One other guy I wanted to mention, I'm going to butcher his name here too, but Ivan Miroshinichenko.
That's very close, yeah.
he fell 13 spots in TSN's final draft rank. He's Dauber Hockey, I think, has him at number 27 in the final mock draft. Mm-hmm. What's your assessment of that player? I know he was dealing with some some health concerns. Is he
Hodgkin's lymphoma, yeah. He had cancer. So that was a big deal, and it didn't help his projections, especially the fact that he wasn't playing. But the main concern, well, first, let's talk about the good stuff with Miroshinchenko. He is a freak athlete. He's one of those guys that you look at and you're like, you are you're a professional player. Like, he just has the build, and he has the leg strength. He's got really good speed. He's got broad shoulders. He can throw his body around really well. But to me, as soon as you get between the ears, there's some concern there. And that's why he's been slipping mostly.
Yeah.
Is there's plays this year that I'm like, that's beer league processing. But there's other moments where he makes a pass and I'm like, wow, amazing. You know? And it's just that duality of Miroshinchenko is that inconsistency. You don't know what you're getting. And that's why he's becoming more of a high-risk pick. Because if he works out great. But there's a solid chance he just doesn't work out.
Okay. I found it interesting because, again, I'll reference TSN, but Bob McKenzie had him as high as number 2 in preseason. So yep. I find that really interesting that he's fallen that far, but lots of things working against him.
Yeah. And even, you know, I had him very high. I think I had him second overall as well at the start of the year. But the more you watched him this year, the more there were concerns. And he wasn't, you know, he was playing in the VHL in a lower division. And to me, you watched him play and it was like, you should be getting more points against these guys. Like, if you put Matvei Michkov, who's probably going to be in the top 5 next year, top 3, if you put him in the VHL this season as a 16, 17-year-old, he probably would have gotten more points just because his game's more projectable and he's giving you more. But, like I said, the decision-making with Miroshinchenko is so hit and miss. It's like, what are you even getting here?
Yeah. Okay. One other question here on the draft-specific stuff. So, I've heard a lot of stuff about Reid Schaefer. He's ranked number 47, I think, by Dauber Hockey, but Craig Button had him pegged as the Oilers pick at number 29. Bob Stauffer and Oilers Now mentioned him as a name to look out for several times over the past few weeks. And I think his NHL comp was Josh Anderson, if I recall correctly, but what's your assessment of that player?
I'd say he's Josh Anderson minus a bit less speed. Essentially, he's a power forward by any sense. You know, he's the traditional power forward to me. Okay. He's got a great shot. He's got broad shoulders. He works the front of the net. He tips pucks. good on the forecheck. I'd like to see more from him playmaking wise and a baseline defensively, because that's what you need to make the NHL to start with, is a baseline on the defensive side. You need to be able to at least understand, you know, positional awareness systems, stuff like that. I don't necessarily see it at that level from Schaefer. I pin him down more as like a mid to late third round pick. But if a team really wants a big guy who can score, that's a big guy who can score.
Okay. Looking at your rankings here, just the ones you had posted on Twitter, you've got Sam Rinzell at 29. Is that kind of who you would see the Oilers, like, does that make sense for them at 29?
My rankings are more just the players in terms of how I would personally rank them between each other. Okay. You know, mock draft wise though, it's hard to pin it on the Oilers, because there's a lot of selections that I think would be good for them. Owen Pickering would be a guy I'd look at in that range who might be available.
I wanted to bring him up too, because Tyler mentioned him last week. So yeah, let's hear a bit about Pickering.
So Pickering, the thing with him, the main concern, I'll get that out of the way, is he's a turnover machine. And it doesn't help that he's playing on a team in Swift Current that isn't really good. But he grew maybe like 5 or 6 inches in the last 2 years, and he's still getting used to his skating, but it's already very good. So if you pair that skating and make it better along with that frame and along with the offensive abilities that he's shown night in and night out, you might have a premier offensive defenseman there. And in that range, I would like the Oilers to swing for the fences and get a player that, you know, has a risk of busting, but a very good risk of, you know, being a very, very decent prospect. And that's Pickering to me. And this range is just range as well. You know, if you guys are looking for wingers, Isaac Howard is one. I'd expect Jagrafurkus to slip a bit. And he's, you know, he's playing in Moose Jaw and doing very well. Probably in the top three of goal-scoring players in the league. I'd say Jagrafurkus, if he's available at 29, the Oilers should jump on him, because just the idea of having a line of McDavid, Draisaitl, and Furkus just scares me. Because the playmaking ability of those first two, paired with Furkus's ability to get open and score, you might get a top-line player who's got, you know, 80 points in the bag, easy, 40 goals. Like, if he works out, he's 5'10 and like 150 pounds. But man, if he works out, that would be fun.
Great name, too.
Yeah.
Great name.
I think, yeah, the best name of the draft for me by far, Jagrafurkus. Like, that's NHL franchise mode generated right there. Yeah. Like, I love it.
Well, it's funny. You're pretty much just, Tyler can't probably be any happier, because he was just talking about those two exact players last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's hence his big goofy grin over there, but that's too bad. All right. Before we let you go here, I wanted to ask you a couple questions just about maybe a more of a fantasy hockey spin to them. So, for season long redraft leagues, like, are there a couple players you would focus on early in September in your drafts?
Players who are like,
might have a fantasy impact next season.
Oh yeah, Shane Wright, almost definitely.
Yeah,
I put Juraj Slafkovský on that list, even though I think personally he might need a year or two in the AHL just to work out his game. I think he's going to play right away. Okay. Other than that, it gets pretty tough. But in the later rounds, I say Nathan Gauthier is one who could have a chance at making an NHL roster right away. He's got the frame, he's got the completeness to his game that teams look for. And another one would maybe be, this might be a stretch, but maybe Tristan Luno, who's a guy I watched a lot. I don't think he has the highest upside, but he's already very complete as a prospect, and he's very, very much near his full, his end result as a prospect. I think he's near his full potential and could be another guy that makes it. Yeah.
I'll just rattle these off really quickly. Top goal scorer in this draft class.
That's a tough one. I'm hesitating between Lekkerimäki, Kamel, and Furkus. Those three to me are probably the top three in whichever order you want.
Okay. Top playmaker for assists.
Playmaker for assists. Nazar and Cooley.
Top power forwards, talking hits, PIMs, multi-category coverage.
Juraj Slafkovský. Jani Neumann, who's a player who's probably going to be drafted later on. And Reid Schaefer.
And then top offensive defenseman, talking points.
points. Mintikov, Matejchuk, and then Yurecek.
Okay. Yeah. And then who are your way too early Calder candidates for next season?
In general, it's pretty hard. Oh, goodness. I'd have to think about this. Try to roll through the...
Mm-hmm. Not the guy who's 24. He doesn't count.
Yeah. I don't want any more Michael Buntings, please. Like that, we got one, you. And that's enough. Like, we're good. God.
Thank you.
But oh man, I don't know if Matt Boldy's still eligible, but I'd put him on that list.
I like that one.
Goodness, who else would I put in there? I'm trying to think. It's just hard because so many guys came in late. Matt Beniers or Ken Johnson. Those two are two guys that I'd see, you know, putting up enough points to get a Calder.
I like the Boldy pick. I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Okay. Guys, any other questions for Hattie before we announce our contest winners? No? We've picked your brain for over an hour now, so that's probably good. Thank you, Hattie, so much. Really appreciate it. That was awesome.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Very much appreciated. All right, well, let's announce our winners here. So for our Dauber Hockey Prize Pack winners, this includes the Fantasy Hockey Prospect Report and the 2022-2023 Fantasy Hockey Guide, which will be available in August. Winner number one, Nick Campano. Winner number two, Sasha Lagarde. I've got just a Twitter handle here. It's WC, so at W_82, but I will reach out to you, send you a message. Robbie McGreen and Dane Weir. So thank you to everyone that listened to the episode and entered the contest. Very much appreciated. We'll get to you guys the winners tomorrow morning. So with that, one last reminder, Ask the Hacks. If you guys have any questions for us, feel free to send them in and get entered to win a free 1-year subscription to the Left Wing Lock iPhone app. And with that, guys, we'll call it an episode. Again, Hattie, thank you. Dauber Hockey, thank you very much. We appreciate the support and the prize packs. If you guys want to follow us on Twitter, it's at FHHacks, on Instagram at Fantasy Hockey Hacks, and check out our website, fantasyhockeyhacks.com. Thanks, boys. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Good night.
Bye, Felicia.
Take care.